7:45, quarter till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Monday morning, time for Count On It. Bank On It, I beg your pardon. Financial insights you can count on with Jason Shields, the CEO of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Hey, Jason, how you doing?
Doing good, Tommy. How are you this morning?
I'm all excited because we got inauguration coverage coming up, and it's a change from my routine, so that's why I butchered a couple of things. But to show you how smart I am, okay, I'm going to shut up and let you talk because we're going to talk about – tell everybody what we're going to talk about.
Yeah. So last week was an interesting one for the financial space. There were several social media posts from the administration talking about injecting some money, having Fannie and Freddie go out and buy a bunch of $200 billion in agency mortgage-backed securities in the market, and then also some statements about limiting institutional purchases of single-family homes. Mm-hmm. The idea behind all of that was simply housing affordability. I mean, you and I have talked about this numerous times. And so this is kind of the administration's attempt to really inject something into that market and make some changes. So, you know, as those things came out last week, my phone lit up with folks asking questions like, what does this mean? What's it going to do to mortgage rates? So I thought it would be a really good morning to just kind of talk about what exactly is going on. What do we know? What don't we know? And what's the impact of these things going to be? Right.
All right.
And so I'll start with the first one, which was, you know, President Trump made a social media post, said, I'm directing Fannie and Freddie to purchase about $200 billion in mortgage-backed securities. Okay, that's cool. What does that mean? And then the other one is the one about institutional limiting the institutional purchase of single-family homes. So first, I'll talk a little bit about Fannie and Freddie, because I know everyone knows the name, but they don't really know what they are. And so they're what's called a GSE, which is a government-sponsored enterprise, right? And that's just a cute way of saying in 2008, when the mortgage crisis came, Fannie and Freddie were privately held, right? Like they were a public company. And they held $3-4 trillion in mortgages. And when everything happened in 2008, they had to get sponsored by the government. They went into what we call conservatorship. So now they're a quasi-government entity. They actually... Or the government has primary ownership in them, but there is technically still stock associated with. But what happened there was the government was a backstop for them, and in essence, they became a government sponsored entity. Mm-hmm. And so whenever you get a mortgage or something like that, they're guaranteeing the mortgage. Their purpose in life is to purchase mortgages off the open market and put them into mortgage backed securities. Now, once they got acquired by the government, they kind of limited what their exposure could be, right? They had trillions of dollars in 2008. So now they have a much, much lower number. And so the federal agencies kind of limit what they can do. So this $200 billion that they're going to say gets injected is in essence saying, we're going to enable them to go buy more mortgages on the open market. And so the theory from the administration there is, if you have more demand in the market, that'll drive down those mortgage interest rates. And we actually saw that Friday, where we crossed underneath 5% for the first time since about 2020 on mortgage rates, which was really good. And that wasn't even from the purchases, that was just from the promise of those purchases. Now, I like to make an important distinction here. That $200 billion number sounds really huge, but it really actually only represents about 2% of the overall market out there for mortgage-backed securities. And so what we don't know is, how are they going to deploy this money? Are they just going to go out and drop that $200 billion at once? Are they going to slowly bleed it in? Because those are the things that matter, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I like to tell everyone in the market for a mortgage right now is just keep an eye on it, right? Because as the details come out and as we find how they're going to deploy this $200 billion, it's going to impact mortgage rates. Now, a lot of people, you know, we've all kind of speculated over the weekend, economists and others, we've all looked at it, and we think this could have basically about a 10 to 25 basis point impact on that spread of mortgage rates. So that, in general, if you're seeing
what kind of spread, Jason?
10 to 25 basis points. Okay. I mean, so that's 0.10 to 0.25, right? Basis points is what we call the numbers after the decimal. And so you kind of saw that Friday, right? And that was before anything had actually happened. So it's an interesting time. I would keep an eye on it and just if you're now, again, I always caution everyone, don't expect rates to go down into the fours, right? You're not going to see that level, not with a $200 billion investment, but you could see some dips. And this could be, if you were on the fence, a really good time to get into it. Now, it's interesting to look at, though, right? Because that's just one of those levers that we can use to control home prices. Because you and I both know, if you lower interest rates on mortgages, home prices go up because obviously demand goes up,
right?
And so your ultimate driver is supply. And so if there's not enough houses being produced, and that's just not a spigot that we could turn on, takes a while to build houses, then that's going to drive prices up. So while this will help affordability in the short term, in the long term, you're going to have to get a couple of the other pieces of this pie moving along. And so that's where the institutional conversation came in, right? Which was basically a comment that said, we're going to limit big institutional investors, hedge funds and things of that nature, from buying large quantities of 1-4 family homes, mm-hmm. because we feel that that's constraining the supply. And so in theory, this works really great, Tom, because you fix the rate by injecting capital into that market. You fix the supply by limiting institutional investors. And so everything should go really well, and you shouldn't have house prices raising as much as they would if just one of those things changed. Mm-hmm. The problem you have is those institutional investors only represent an actual fraction of the market, not a huge percentage. And in general, where those places buy houses, they're not really necessarily doing it in a place like New Orleans. They do it in large growing areas where housing supply is somewhat constrained. And what they actually do with those houses is they put them out to rent, right? Because there's a huge population that, for a variety of reasons, don't want to pursue home ownership, either affordability or perhaps they're just temporarily in a location or whatever that is. And so the institutional lender, if you start limiting that type of investment, you could have the adverse effect of actually driving rental rates up, which is good if you're a renter, but if you own properties that you want to rent. But if you're already having trouble making your rent now, and you constrain that supply a little bit more, things can get a little tough. So these are all really interesting things. I want to kind of preface it with to everyone that these were statements, and we don't know the exact implications of how these are going to be implemented yet. But it got a lot of press over the weekend, so I wanted to kind of touch on those. So, go ahead, Tom.
So I'm just wondering, at what point does this become real to people? Like when with the institutional buyers and the private equity companies, for example, at what point does it actually maybe make housing stock more available for them when it comes to buying? Or is that strictly about buying? Or does it lower rents? Or does somebody else move in and take it over? Because it seemed like a couple of different things could happen.
Yeah, no, it could. So I'll tell you, the wheels of progress tend to move slow, Tommy. Social media moves fast, and actual implementation of policy tends to be a little bit slower than those. So nothing's going to change overnight. But if you're in the market for a home and you've just kind of been sitting on the fence, keep an eye on those 30-year rates every day, right? When you see that number you feel is really good, go ahead and lock it in, right? Anything with a 5 handle right now is a really good rate. Mm-hmm. If you're a renter and you're concerned that your prices of rent are going to go up, touch on the New Orleans area, they unfortunately will, Tommy, right? You and I both know our insurance continues to go up, our property taxes continue to go up. And if you own the property that you're renting to people, you have to recuperate that money. And that's just unfortunately reflected in the cost of rent. Now, if you long-term get institutional investors out of that, you'll see supply grow and you'll see those rental rates go down. But it's a multi-tiered fix you got to go through. So
and if you,
I would end with just be cautious, everyone, and keep an eye on everything that's out there. You should start seeing some progress over the next couple of months in this space.
And you'll never find the perfect moment, right?
No, if you try to catch a falling knife, Tommy, and nobody wins, right? Like, I mean, you know, you can't time it perfect. Just time it good enough, and I think you're fine.
What a great way to end it. If you try to catch a falling knife, nobody wins. Thank you, Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. If you missed any of it, you can download the Odyssey app, use the rewind feature, and go through it a little bit more slowly, if that will help you. 7:55, but some great information. 5 till 8, traffic now, WWL.